present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Times, read by Catriona Young.
Cubby Broccoli has been producing the James Bond films for 30 years now and couldn't live without them. If I didn't make these movies, says Mr. Broccoli, I think I'd become a vegetable.
Thank you, Catriona, and thank you, Tony Bagnall of Wirral, for sending us that. Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Francis Ween. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Andrew Rawnsley. Before we start round one, here's an item from the Yorkshire Post.
After pleading guilty to murder, Stojkic was jailed for life and ordered to be deported at the end of his sentence.
Richard, what record pass equals a record failure?
This can't be to do with the royal family, is it?
No.
No. I think it may be to do with the belated discovery that all the people who've been passing their GCE exams... GCSE, should never have passed at all because they were so ignorant. Is that the case? These inspectors have produced this alarming report, confirming what everyone knew already.
Once hailed as the greatest leap forward in the history of education since the discovery of the back of the bike shed, the GCSE replaced the O-level 15 years ago in 1988. Government education inspectors have now written a scathing report on the suspiciously good results in their neatest handwriting, using only one side of the argument. Francis, welcome to the show. Your question: whose black target could leave many seeing red?
Could it be to do with the economy? No?
Yes. Well, in a way, yes, of course.
Norman Lamont?
No, it's much more High Street than that.
High Street. Oh, yes, of course.
Yes, of course.
Someone has lost a lot of money. Business or other.
Banks.
you can find them in most high streets, clearing banks, and they've lost a lot of money. And that's really about it, I think. They're not doing very well. I think. Yes,
well, I think you've covered the subject very thoroughly there,
Norman Lamont, something to do with that. Banks.
I think we should do very well now because they're going to charge people for walking through the door and standing on the carpet. And because you have to queue inside a bank when it's raining outside, because there's only one window, they're going to say, well, you could have been out there getting wet or being run over by a bus, so that's another £5. Basically, everything you have to do with a bank will now be paid, even if you're in credit and have millions of pounds. There's no way of borrowing money, except by going in and saying, I am Maurice Maxwell, a long-lost brother, and I've just found a method of turning water into wine, and can I have £400 million? Then they say yes, but if you're like me and a fiver in credit, they take the car away.
This is so that bank managers can afford to buy this sophisticated listening equipment.
Very much for that. Well, everybody got bonuses on that. It's the banks who are considering a move to abolish free banking after falling on hard times. Some are said to be down to their last multi-million pound TV advertising campaign. The spectre of a mass exodus from the banks has inspired our friends in the High Street to come up with a new design for their interiors. In future, the chains will be removed from the biros and placed around the customers' ankles. Andrew, again, welcome to the programme. Your question, what looks like being a non-starter?
The non-starter is Mr. Mitterrand's attempt to persuade his countrymen to endorse the Maastricht Treaty. The other non-starter is that Monsieur Major found he had another engagement, a bowls match or something like that, and couldn't take part with Mr. Mitterrand in the TV debate on the issue.
Absolutely right. It's all about Maastricht and how the Danes think it's a bad idea, the French think it's a plot for domination by the Germans think it's a plot to prevent domination by the Germans. And this is what is known in Brussels as European unity. Now, John Major isn't sure what Maastricht is, but it's definitely a worldwide problem. Alan, guess what? Here's a piece of music for you. I'm I'm instructed not to tell you the title of that song, but I can tell you that it was sung by Shag Connors and the Carrot Crunchers. Which will give you a clue. The question is, why aren't jobs for the boys?
Well, that was yodeling. They don't yodel in Sweden. This is the Swedish one.
That's right.
This is Swedish Boy Au Pair, one of the high street pornographic videos you can now get, which will instruct you on how to look after your staff. Or his, indeed. But there was this this bloke with a beard came over to look after children. And you're not allowed to. You've got to be a woman. And Kenneth Clark has seen to that. As it were. I mean, he's going to let him stay here for a month, but he can't be an au pair. He's got to be a... Poor bugger, he's got to be a tourist. That'll finish him.
Absolutely right, in every respect. All about Swedish au pair John Ingolstadt, who was threatened with deportation after a body search at the airport revealed that he had something on him that he shouldn't if he wanted to be an au pair. This came about because Kenneth Clark and his bright bunch at the Home Office dusted off some legislation that requires au pairs in this country to be young, single and female. That's the Frustrated Middle-Aged Husband Act, Wishful Thinking Amendment, 1969. And the scores at the end of the first round are quite interesting, in that Richard and Francis are 3, but Alan and Andrew have already leapt into the lead with 5. We start round 2 with this notice in the Inverness Courier.
To the person who took my hover mower without my authority. In the rush, you forgot the grass box. The box is of no use to us, so please return and collect it. Whilst on holiday in Africa, I employed a witch doctor to put a curse on you. If my money was well spent, please phone me with your remaining limb.
Well, thank you, Kathleen Irvine, for sending us that one. Richard, your question again. Who took his roadshow on French leave?
Yes, indeed. Who took his...
Cast your mind to Jermyn Street.
Jermyn Street.
Could it be Michael Gray's brother-in-law?
Who had a little antique shop.
Yes.
Just round the corner from here, from where we are now.
Yes, that's right. Yes,
in Jermyn Street.
Oh, interesting. We're in Lower Regent Street, for those who like geography.
And he's called Arthur Davidson.
Is he?
Yes.
And
extra points? Mounting up. We're up to about 10 by now.
I thought we were undeservedly penalised in the first round, actually, because Francis answered the question about the banks very well. And made a witty remark about the bank manager with his listening equipment.
Yes, he got a bonus for that.
Which in my mind deserved a bonus. And yet we were penalised. However, I'm not complaining about it.
It's the handicapping system, which is coming into force this
year. No, anyway, he got his bonus.
Relates to the Grade family, which are all the news this
week. Yes, that's right.
And there you have it. Like everyone else, like the banks, that Francis mentioned in round one, everyone's in trouble these days.
Give him two, just shut him up. Let me tell you the answer that I have here. It's all about antiques dealer Arthur Davidson, who decided to give up the struggle and move to France. On his way, he posted the keys to his home and business through the door of his bank with a note which read, "You've always wanted my house and you told me how I should run my business, so here are the keys. By the way, I've left the lights on." Francis is another one. Who hadn't suffered enough already, frankly speaking?
Oh, dear. Must be the Duke of Edinburgh.
It's not unadjacent to the Duke of Edinburgh.
Is it something to do with some broadcasting? BBC, Michael Gray made a speech about broadcasters misusing their resources, spending them irresponsibly in basements.
I think you're approaching it crab-wise, but I get the point.
And using equipment that was quite unnecessary. Frank Bowe, I think he's called.
Yes, it depends.
Who has suffered enough. And he went on television with his wife, Nesta, extra point, to explain what had happened, or rather not explain what happened, but say how sorry he was and how sorry she was. And given that the subject was his visit to a flagellant basement, it was rather odd that she kept saying throughout this interview on Sky TV, "I'm not going to be beaten by this, I'm not going to let it beat me."
I also enjoyed Francis Frank Boff's... talking about the way the press had treated him. He said, "They hunt you down, they strip you bare, and they ravish you." I wasn't sure whether that was a complaint or a demand for more.
Don't you like the way the BBC look after their own?
Frank Boff now works for ITV, I think. as a television critic, you wouldn't know that, but I thought I'd mention it.
Because he left. You've got it in for him. I think he's suffered enough.
I do. I
think we've all suffered enough. Get on with
well,
it.
Andrew, have a listen to this.
Prostituting themselves, chasing a spurious starlight, trinkets in airports sufficient to lead them astray.
Does the player exist in any human endeavor? Who's been known to resist sirens of fame and possession?
Your question is, whose checkered career is back on the board?
Yeah, well, this is Bobby Fischer,
right,
who is restaging his great match with Spassky in a place called Sveti Svetan, I think it is, defying all the UN sanctions about not going to Yugoslavia. It's being billed as the revenge match of the 20th century, but you might say what's happening in what was called Yugoslavia is really the revenge match of the 20th century. And I think Fischer won the first game, but then he seems to have organised the whole thing down to the size of the lavatory seats and what sort of clock they should use. So it's not surprising, perhaps, if he's going to win this contest.
Yes, you're absolutely right about
it. It's independent that he eats 5 eggs every day for breakfast in Yugoslavia, Bobby Fischer. Makes you wonder if his eccentric behaviour in the last few years is just through a chronic indigestion.
Could be. During the pre-match ceremonies, Fischer closely inspected half a dozen tables before choosing which one he'd most like to storm away from. Then held a fascinating question and answer session in which he put the questions to himself and then refused to answer them. Finally, he produced a letter from the United States Treasury Department, instructed him not to play, opened it and carefully spat on it. It's only being so cheerful that keeps him going, I think. Alan, how is a change of policy putting claimants in the picture?
This isn't the one about differential fines for rich people driving fast.
No.
It's insurance policy.
It's insurance claims, isn't it?
You must answer it.
It's when you come back from holiday with £2,000 in your back pocket, and then you tell the insurance company, I lost £2,000 on the last day of my holiday, and they're now doing video recordings, aren't they?
That's
presumably, if the money's
true.
Sitting in your pocket or whatever, to catch you out.
There's a thing about private detectives in my paper.
Yes,
putting private
right.
detectives on you, aren't they? Who will follow you around and make sure you...
With telephoto lenses, if you're in Saint-Tropez.
Saying, I lost the top of my bikini, someone stole it. I would like 15 bob and a house in the country and a £4 million settlement. And then and this photographer springs out of the woodwork. Says, I'm Ace Detective Agency. Yes, I did see that.
Be grateful for half a point on this one.
Yes. And let me give you the scores at the end of the second round, which are Richard and Francis 7, but Alan and Andrew still in the lead with 9. We start round 3 with news from the Pontefract and Castleford Express.
The threat of closure at the colliery has now become a reality, said National Union of Mine Workers Branch Secretary Bill Doughty, unless we get our act together and pull the pit out of the hole it's now in.
Well, thank you, Joan Rees of Pontefract, for that one. Richard, what dampened the mood of the drying Dutchman?
Oh, yes, indeed. This was all to do with the bank holiday weekend, when... Dutchman?
Yeah, bought an estate in Scotland, £1.5 million.
Oh, yes.
That one.
This chappy had bought a house in Scotland. Was he Dutch?
Oh, yes. and his wife.
God.
His wife was Dutch.
He's a few cells short of an amoeba, I think, sometimes.
I don't know, he couldn't insult Dutchman on the programme in that way.
Well, we're talking about you, your great puddin'. You have to admire his pluck for coming on week after week. He's going to be a disc jockey on Radio 2 as well.
Yes. It's true.
Seems appropriate somehow,
it's
doesn't
true.
It?
Where Jameson failed, I...
Oh, dear.
Slightly more refined tones will be heard.
Yes, come
no,
on, let's
no,
go
this
back
Dutchman,
to the Dutchman.
He bought this house in Scotland and he made the belated discovery, or his wife made the belated discovery, that if you live in Scotland, it rains every day. So he had to sell up.
An average daily rainfall of 4.5 inches, according to locals, the best summer in years. Prompted Mrs. Sandy Dix. Sounds more like Fergie, doesn't it? I'm sorry, no. I do apologise. I mean, there may be clergymen in the room.
There would have been no nude sunbathing there.
No, no, right, enough.
No topless.
It's no suntan, it's rust. Aye, where was I? Oh, yes. Prompted Mrs. Sandy Dix to tell her husband, it's estate or me. And after the most difficult coin toss in his life, Mark Dix agreed to return to tropical sun... Mark Dix agreed to return to tropical sun-kissed, windmill-strewn Uden. I'm ever so sorry, I've been at it for years, I'm going mad. Francis, here's a piece of music for you.
Fancy, fancy, Urie. Fancy, fancy, Urie. Fancy, fancy, Urie.
The question is, what question of black and white is more than a question of black and white?
Is it? Something to do with Great American Railway?
No, it's that was called All Aboard the Minstrel Train.
All right. Well, if you play songs about railways, you can't expect me to get the answer. But as it is, it's to do with the black and white minstrel show.
Yes.
Which is returning.
Yes.
Amazingly, after all these years in the wilderness. And people are going to black up and prance around and do their old Jolson numbers and
no,
go on their own.
No,
except that because of...
Wait, you two.
Just you'll get your turn.
You'll
in
get
due
your
course.
Turn.
Well, it's one of those stories, I think I didn't read the last paragraph, so I probably missed it, but it was essentially the black and white minstrels coming back, but they were going to black up, but because of protests, they're going to tone it down a bit.
Well, the white and white.
It's a bit approximate, isn't it, really?
They're going to be all grey. They're going to be all sort of delicate shades.
They're not going to change their natural complexion. They're just going to appear au naturel, more or less.
Well, you're so near it, but I...
No, he teased that wonderfully.
Yeah,
Frank
yes.
Buff will be on the phone any minute. I thought he did a marvellous job on that. He knew exactly from the start. You could tell.
Of course he did. We've got the points. You've got your points.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lovely
God.
Well
we
done.
He knows clever Nick's putting there all
in. Yes, it is. It's ridiculous. Well, he got it wrong. It's neither here nor there.
If we answer these things too slickly and too easily, right. It'll be like the GCSE results. You'll think we're cheating or something wrong.
Well, that's a point of view, I suppose.
You'll say that the standards have been lowered, otherwise we couldn't possibly have answered it.
We've been lowering the standards on this programme for many years now, I tell you. It's all about the Black and White Minstrel Show, which opened at the Bristol Hippodrome to an appreciative audience and a good luck message from the company's patron, Michael Jackson. The Commission for Racial Equality is far from pleased, even though the Minstrel Show does have one unifying effect. Everyone, whatever their colour, thinks it's rubbish. Andrew, who felt browned off after a single-issue attack?
Oh, cowpats. This is about cowpats.
Is it?
Oh.
Yes.
I think this is cowpats. This is when the manure hit the cow.
No, that comes later.
I'll have 2 points for the one that comes later.
Well, all right, we'll save it for you for then.
Well,
this is not this is an American question here.
Oh, Murphy Brown. Is there a Murphy
yes,
in front
right.
of the
Murphy
brand?
Brown. Right.
Yes, that's
right.
Dan Quayle had... particularly condemned in one of his long and rambling speeches about family values, a very popular show called Murphy Brown, I think, in which the successful journalist female lead has a son or a daughter out of wedlock. Anyway, the American film and TV establishment have hit back by showering the show with lots of awards. Saying, stuff you, Dan Quayle, basically.
That's right. It's the American Democratic Party's election vote winner, Dan Quayle, or what's he done now, as he's known in the White House. The vice president fell foul of the Emmys, which granted Best Actress and Best Comedy Awards to Murphy Brown, a show which he condemned for undermining the American way, liberty, equality, and other words ending in E like potato. Alan, which international call gave Harold the bird?
This is Ian Botham's business manager.
That's right.
And during the last of the Texaco one-day matches, Harold Bird, who was carrying a lot of other junk, suddenly found his right thigh ringing. This was Botham's portaphone, his cell phone. Botham was feeling the slips. Presumably not doing well enough. I mean, his business manager rang up and said, there will be no endorsements this winter unless you stop a couple going past you. I was away at the time, but my newspaper said that the crowd was in fits of laughter at this. I find this hard to understand.
Absolutely right.
One of those things that sort of looks funny in itself and crowds fall about at test matches when they've had a few. But in the cold light of the news quiz, it's not really funny at all.
It's not bad, Alan. I think you've done very well with it. It's the revelation that cricket umpire Harold Dickie Bird stopped play in the middle of a friendly, fun-packed international between England and Pakistan because he had to answer Ian Botham's mobile telephone. Bird had agreed to store the phone in the pocket of his white coat, although he drew the line at the fax machine and the minibar. After the umpire had relayed Botham's message to the caller, play was resumed, only to be stopped three balls later when Beefy's takeaway pizza order was delivered to him in the slips by a man on a moped. Unfortunately, he dropped it. Dickie Bird says he won't be doing it again because at some stage during the day his pocket was vandalised. And the scores at the end of the third round are Richard and Francis hanging on grimly with 11, but Alan and Andrew still with their two-point lead at 13. Before we start the final round, here's a tale from the Scotsman.
The long series of misdirected poll tax demands reached its lowest point when a bill arrived at the Edinburgh home of one Tara Corbett. Tara was a 14-year-old German shepherd dog who died over a month ago. Lothian Region Deputy Director of Finance John Diggory was perplexed. If the dog was only 14, he said, it shouldn't be liable for poll tax anyway.
Thank you, Catriona, and thank you, Beatrice Martin of Edinburgh, for sending us that. Now, Richard, will you have a listen to this? Whose confusion led to abandonment of the cold shoulder?
This is another oldie, isn't it?
Yes, it is an oldie.
You deliberately feed me these oldie questions in order to...
Well, we're trying to help you.
Well, last week, you'll remember, there was an oldie who went on the motorway in his motorised wheelchair.
Yes, yes, I remember
and
it
this
well.
Week's oldie story is about an oldie who parked his car on the lay-by and went off to have a pee or something. And then forgot all about it, and he's left his wife in the car. And he wandered off into the blue.
Went home and made himself a cup of tea.
Went home. And who was it, actually?
It's all about absent-minded Tom Brown, who sparked off a major police search after he left his wife in their broken-down Skoda near Bristol and forgot to collect her. The 73-year-old latter-day Captain Oates had intended to seek help, but became confused and took a bus and train 70 miles to their home in Tewkesbury. Police found him with his feet up having a cup of tea and asked if he'd forgotten anything. And Mr. Brown replied, "Oh, yes, my digestive biscuits." Francis, your question now. Who were given the order of the boot on a stag night?
I thought we'd had the Frank Boff question.
We have. This is another person.
What was the last word, Mr. Jones?
Stag
night.
Night.
Which is falling fast even as I speak.
Well,
This is a hopeless task. I've been asking.
Little hint of a clue?
I'll give you a clue. It was about a woman called Joanne Cokie.
That's the first bit of the clue, right? And the next sentence?
She assaulted three police women during a stag night.
No.
Nobody knows?
I think it was only in the International Herald Tribune, probably, this story, wasn't it?
Or the Bosnian Gazette.
The Bosnian Gazette. And Chess Weekly.
Certainly wasn't in the Morning Advertiser and Licensed Victualler.
Oh, we're getting to the big time there. This is all about Joanne Cokie, who assaulted three policewomen during a stag night melee whilst on crutches. Joanne Cokie, she puts her left boot in, broke her leg playing soccer. Apparently she mistook an opponent's head for the ball.
Do we know anything about this woman's husband?
I mean, this was
One legged footballer who knocks policemen about.
Well, it's a good story, isn't it, though? Terrific.
There.
I'll come to the end now. Andrew, who delivered his protest off pat?
Cowpats. I knew this would come round to me eventually.
You've already got your marks. Tell us the answer.
It's when the manure hit the council offices. That's except right. I think it hit the wrong one, didn't it?
Yeah.
This farmer was extremely annoyed that he couldn't get planning permission from his local council to erect a shed or whatever he wanted to erect. And he finally took the sort of matter and the cowpat into his own hands, or rather lorry, and dumped 4 tons of it on the local council offices.
Absolutely right. Muck went all over the housing department and in through the windows, covering desks and office equipment. Yes, this time it really did hit the fan. Unfortunately, Dave hit the wrong building. Planning's a few doors down, but if you do need to visit the housing department, just follow your nose. Alan, why was fast food a failure on the Oriental Express?
The Japanese railways.
So.
The Nikkei index being way down, the yen being under pressure, and all sorts of troubles down there, have diversified into turtle breeding. I didn't understand why, but they've done it. It just shows that British Rail isn't the worst system in the world. Japanese railways being strapped for cash diversified into turtle breeding, edible turtles. And the only problem with this is the turtles were edible to one another.
Right.
And when they turned up, when the Wheel Tappers and Shunters Club of Kyoto turned up, they found there was one very large turtle, where previously there had been several thousand. And these turtles turned out to be cannibals. And right. They don't know what to do with it, except run it between Tokyo and Ishihara, pulling a very slow train.
The excuse was that they'd bought the wrong sort of turtle.
Oh! Very good. Give him a bonus.
I will give him a bonus for that. He deserves it. But before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team have brought along. Richard, have you brought a cutting for us?
This is from a parish magazine, the St. Leonard's Parish magazine, so it's quite funny. It says, at the choir concert next Wednesday, Mrs. Sharp will sing, "Put me in my little wooden bed, accompanied by the vicar."
Oh, good enough for the oldie. Francis, what have you brought?
This is from a front page story in the Times newspaper just over a week ago at the time of the Royal Tape thing. 40,000 phone hotline to listen to Royal Tape is the headline, this sort of thing they have on the front page of the Times nowadays. And it's about the old bank manager, Renan, Mr. Renan. It says, Mr. Renan claimed yesterday that he and his wife had picked up the conversation by accident while amusing themselves with an electronic gadget.
Andrew.
Yeah, I'm afraid this is a bit more Fergiana from my own newspaper, The Guardian's tasteful coverage of the whole business. And particularly the photos, of course, which none of us have even glanced at, of the Duchess of York in Saint-Tropez. A palace aide, when asked if the Queen was upset by the photos, said, "We do not attribute emotions to Her Majesty."
Alan?
Well, I got one from The Guardian as well, which after years of getting its spelling right, I'm glad to say, has gone back to its bad old ways. It says, the DOE plans to release the report and give local people until the end of December to comment on it. The department will then review the comments and fake a decision.
Thank you, Maestro. Thank you all. Now let's look at the final score. Well, Richard and Francis have done jolly well, because they got 14, but Alan and Andrew have beaten them. They got 17. This week's winners. Well done. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Gloucestershire Echo, sent in by W.J. Jenkin of Cheltenham.
Borough engineer Mr. Alan Tuckett said, the next stretch of sewer work is the Wyman's Brook foul water sewer replacement scheme running from the gasworks at Gloucester Road to the Taylor's Lane swimming pool.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Francis Wheen and Andrew Rawnsley. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Katrina Young. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele and the producer was Colin Swash.